Testing.
Good morning. My name is Jeff, and I'm an adult child. Really nervous. You're not lions exactly, but maybe small crocodiles. I came to this program this fall. It's 22 years ago. And I came not willingly. I came because I was in a treatment. In my hometown, we have this addictive treatment center where you can get treated for all sort of addictions. And I was there because I crashed, and I didn't know exactly why, but I knew my father was an alcoholic. So I went there to join the codependent program, but then I met all sorts of doctors, and they were doing testing for, you know, the alcohol and the stress and the everything, like the adult child. And my therapist said, you should attend the adult child meeting. So I didn't join the addictive program for alcohol, but I was watched, and I was in this program where we dealt with all of the addictiveness together. I was there for a year in an open treatment, and I had signed the agreement that I would do my homework and that I would participate actively and that I would attend meetings. And they asked me every time I went in this treatment group, have we all attended meetings? And it was about my fourth, maybe fifth time I had all of these explanations. And the therapist said, well, you know, there's a long line of people who wants your chair, so if you don't go, you can't stay here. So I went to open AA meetings, I went to IMA, and I went to ACA. And ACA have been my main program all of this time. So I grew up in a dysfunctional family, of course, because I'm in ACA. My father was an alcoholic. He had a son before. He met my mother, and my mother had two kids before she met my father. So I had this broken family from the start, and then the abuse in the family, the violence, and you know, all of that. So I was in some ways a lonely child. My siblings and I, the nearest me is 9 years, and then it's 11 and 13, so they're very much older. And my mother was really codependent, and she buried in work. So when things got really rough, when I was about 10, I was alone a lot at home. And for many years, we had this pattern that we work from Monday to Tuesday, the Thursday, and then the drinking started on the Thursdays, and they kept going in the weekends. And when the drinking started, it was the fighting between my parents, and it was the leaving at home in the middle of the night. The police showed up. It was a lot of that. But we lived in a nice house. My dad always had a good job, respected. So nobody really did anything. So when my relatives thought it was too hard for them, they left. And they didn't bring me. They just left me. So it was too hard for the adults, but I was still there. That was my upbringing. Yeah. So I lived many years with my sister. She took me in when it was really hard. And then when I got 16, there was this person in school that helped me. So we moved. My mother got this option that Jeanette could get her own apartment, or you leave together. And she left with me. So we left when I was 16. This was the easy things to see in my background. This was obvious. And I could deal with it right away. I could say my dad is an alcoholic. And I went to Al-Anon meetings. And we could talk about the, you know, the 10 or 15 times that was really abusive. The harder things, they came through the years, like not being validated. That was really a wound for me, because we didn't have the time to sit down in evenings and just ask ourselves, how was your day? What do you want to do? Is it fun going to football or hanging out with your friends? My parents didn't have that time. They were so occupied with themselves and the harm and the wounds and the working and, you know, themselves. The system around me, like my sister, the hero, that took a lot of time to see that she enjoyed taking care of me. I was a function in her life. She didn't do it out of love. So when I grew and got more dependent, I could see that she found it hard. So that made me, when I was an adult, a really, I was in a crisis, a personal crisis. I didn't know what I liked. I didn't know who I was. I didn't know how to make healthy attachments to people, so I avoided them all. I was all shut down. And I remember when in the treatment we got this paper with all the emotions, and I could maybe feel two. That's it. It was like, you know, a thumble to be just in a carousel. That was not nice, but I didn't know what emotions were in there. And there was the kick, you know, the thrill, the adventure. That was my two. So that made me a person who was always afraid, especially around many people, because I was so used to, in my family system, that we attacked each other with shame or with anger, said harsh things, or joked in a harsh way to each other. So, and I would have never stood in front of people. This is the worst thing. But I like you, so it's okay. It made me insecure, because I had never been validated. I didn't know how to recognize feelings or interests, or, you know, how to live, how to have a relationship. I just looked at all of my friends and I thought, okay, so they're doing football. I should be enjoying that. So I did it. And you should have a boyfriend. So I had. And, you know, all of these things. But I was never present. I didn't know how to be intimate or there. So really insecure. And that, of course, made me seek up people, or been, you know, attached myself to people that were secure in my eyes. People with a lot of energy, people with no boundaries telling me what to do. That was kind of awesome, because then I didn't have to think and I could just attach myself to their back and go along. And I was really shame bound. All of my whole person was driven by shame. Shame to be seen, shame to be around people, shame to speak. I could go for days just shaming myself for things I've said or didn't say when I was around other people. It was unbearable. And that made me, of course, feel the anxiety, and the anxiety made me act out in my own ways. And I can really relate to the ACA description, where it could be anything to act out in. It was training sometimes, it was work, it was the alcohol or the partying, it was, relationships. But I acted out on my anxiety. And then when I came to ACA, they started talking about this attachment issue caused by the PTSD or the complex PTSD. And I could really relate to that. I never had an insecure attachment before the program. The people around me, they didn't know what to do because they were broken. So I can relate to that insecure, avoidant attachment, where I distance myself from people, always avoid seeking support, especially when I'm in a crisis. I want to be this self-reliant, strong person. You know, that's kind of comforting for me. Seeking help, that is uncomfortable. And that made me not see the unhealthy persons around me. So I felt really like at home with people that were broken, people that had similar traits as my dad, or similar traits as my mom or as my sister, that made me feel at home. And I remember in the early meetings, I had this mantra, the mantra of, why do they always find me? I can't figure it out. But when I met people that were secure and confident, I was really afraid of that. That was a person that I would go around. And if, you know, I didn't get like 10 invitations, and you know, we need you, it's going to be so fun if you join, then I didn't have the courage to be there. So that was the persons I felt safe with. But of course, that was the persons that kept the abuse going. So I kept it going for myself for a couple of years before I found the program. And it made me found this man in my hometown. I thought he was awesome. He was my father was a really a big person with big emotions and big temper, and he was the boss, and he always knew everything. He was the opposite of humility. And I met this man. He was always calm. He never got stressed, and he knew everything. He was intelligent, and I thought he was cute, and you know, and he always knew what to do, and he loved telling me what to do. Yeah, so match made in heaven. And I was in the program when we really got together and we moved in. But yeah, you know, it takes years to do the work. So we got a child, yeah, and he was not the big temper man, but he later got I'm skipping all of that abuse because it's the same abuse, you know. It's just goes on and on. But he was mean, and he was looking down on me always, and I was comfortable with that. I didn't know it was wrong because that was the way I always lived. So I missed the red flags there, and we had a child, and he lied and everything broke down, and he got when he was in a psychiatric ward, he got narcissistic personality disorder with a few more traits that were, and that explains so much about myself, how I could ever have thought that this was the perfect man with this kind of really broken behavior. So we got a child, and that's my really the greatest sorrow I bear with me, because my eldest boy, this is his father, so he will, I hope, join us. Yeah. But in ACA, I've learned so many things, and it's so hard to put them together in 30 minutes. But I learned about boundaries. That was news to me. I was like this figure that always fitted other. That was my defense mechanism. That if I was this easygoing figure with absolutely no needs, and I never tell you my needs, then you will think I'm easygoing and fun, and you know. So there was no boundaries at all for me. So in ACA, I had to train on setting boundaries, and I had to train on just be aware of them when I should be setting a boundary. It took me years in the program to just feel them like in an instant. And the more people, the harder it got. And the faster choices to make, the harder it got. So I needed time to train. And I like rewinded. I could go home and I felt like, oh, I should have said something. Oh, darn. And I would go over it and over it. And then I found the courage within the program and with support to go back to phone or, you know, go to that person and said, I would have so liked if I had the courage to say this then, but I'm saying it now. And then it took me shorter and shorter time until I could say it right away. I learned, this should be obvious, but it was not. I learned that abuse is not normal. It's not okay. And that also took me years, because I read the book and I could relate. In my head, I could relate. And it took so many years to just get down in the heart, to feel it's not normal. It's not okay. You don't speak to other people like this. And when I did the step work, we look at all the, you know, message we got when we were kids. And I had so many messages where I came to adults, and I like said, I'm sad, I'm afraid, this is hard. I think my dad is an alcoholic, and they wanted to comfort, take away the pain. So they said, oh, but your dad loves you. Yeah, you know, yeah, it won't happen again. Or my mom, she really wanted to comfort me. So she was like, she had this saying, you know, it's better if you're angry than sad. If you just could get angry with your dad instead of being sad. And I was confused. You know, I didn't know how to get angry. I was angry, but I didn't know what that was. So it's not normal. It's not normal with the violence, and it's not normal with abuse of words. It's not okay. I learned about codependency. So that was a couple of years in the program. That's a game changer, to learn about the codependency and be free from the codependency. Yeah, stand on your own leg. And I could see my person around me, none of my family, except for my dad, of course, he was in the his last years in life, but he was not emotional sobriety. He was only sober. So I could see my mom and my sister and all the codependency around me, and how my part in their codependent system, how I could relieve myself from that so they could go on with their dysfunction, that I can step away. I'm not destined to play the part in their drama. And then I learned a lot of ways to take care of my grief, because my grief made me a really angry person. I'd stored it so deep, and I was so cut off. So some things I'm still not in touch. I can tell them. I can tell how I was locked in a room for a whole night, and it's cut off still. And I don't know if it will come to me, but I was so cut off. So dealing with the grief, that was really an important thing. And then, you know, when you've done the steps, I did done them a couple of times, because when I came to ACOA, it was called that in Sweden back then, the Big Red Book, it didn't exist. So we had this other steps we worked with. And then I did them again, the yellow steps. And then you're supposed to get a sponsee. And I remember this girl came up to me and she said, but you have so many years in the program. And I almost thought she was joking, looking at me. I was so insecure. It was so hard. But that was the next big change, because healing the attachment issues, that's what really really turned around my ability to have healthy relationships. So I was used to either be the superior or the inferior. I didn't have had really healthy relationships where we're at the same page. Two adults taking care of one each other. So So in the sponsorship, I get, that was my gym for you know, relationships, and also again setting the boundaries where the sponsee felt abandoned at times, wanted you know, the right way to go, like the answer, and just follow along. So I practiced and practiced and practiced. I'm just saying, I don't know what's the best thing for you. What do you think? But, you know, go to the meeting. Keep on calling. We do the steps. And not providing the answer for everyone else. That's not my mind to do as a sponsor. I just tag along for the ride. My sponsee, they do the work. And not abandon people when it gets rough, but be brave to stand along and say, I think we should talk about this. What do you think? It's hard for me when you say this. What do you think? So that's really important, because if I can't say it in the program, I can't say it outside the program. And the same for service. I've done a lot of service in different levels, and that's like a gym for, you know, a gym for setting boundaries and co-op with other adult child. Because when we are trying to cooperate as adult children, we have all this, you know, you have the leader and you have the follower and you have the insecure one. All of these things I had in my family, in all of the groups I've done service, I had to practice this. And not be the one saying, oh, I drop out, this is too hard, we can do it. But just stand firm, we can do it, and we can talk about it. So that's the best thing about service. So that was really a gym for me, to take away skills that I later could use at work and in my family. And also see what happens to me when I'm stressed and in this system. Who do I become? What kind of traits pops up then if I get a little stressed? So that has been really, really helpful. And my journey in this program has really been about getting to know myself. And that took many years, and I also got this great tips, like do things you like. Oh my god, that was so hard. I didn't know what I liked, so I tried going to meditation conventions. I love the, you know, where they put the hands on the head. I love that. I don't love vocal meditations, for example. That makes me tired. It's just sounds coming in. Yeah. I tried massage. That was a tip I got from. I hate it. It just hurts. Absolutely. It makes me so uncomfortable with people I don't know touching me. I hate it. I tried so many times. So I really tried different things, and I find out who I am, what I like, and I'm brave enough to try new things, and I can tell other people who I am and what I like, so therefore they can choose if they like me. So if I'm no one, then they won't be able to connect with me. But now I'm this person, so you can connect with me. So that's awesome. And if the dysfunction is a fire, pain would have been the gasoline for me. And I can see the avoidance of pain is strong in my family, of course, because there's been a lot of pain. And with the help of the program, I found that I can go through pain. Like when my mother died in cancer, she was all cut up. She was a codependent until the end. And I could, with my program and my friends, go through the pain and be there and just accept that she's not willing to accept. There was really strange things going on with her because she wasn't present. But I could be in the pain. I can take care of it. It's not fun. I'll give you that. But when I go through the pain, all of the other emotions is also there. When I cut off one, I cut them all off. You can't choose which one to cut off. So there was also happiness, gratefulness, love. So not avoiding the pain, but go through it with you. That's a main thing. And when I try to avoid it, then I take a few steps back in my emotional sobriety. I can't choose the feeling that comes up, but I can choose which one to act on and which one to deal with in other ways. And since I've practiced the validating thing and gotten validated myself, I can validate my son. I can say to him, I would also be offended if my father said that to me. What do you want to do about it? And I can be a grown up who says, you know, if you were sick, we would have gone to a doctor. And now you're hurt, so we go to a therapist. And since I'm your parent, there's not an option. We will try for you. So I've grown from this no person to this person that other people can rely on, and I'm so proud and thankful. And you know, you did that for me. We did that. Yeah. So I'm grateful to be here, to get invited to this awesome place. It's so beautiful. I love skiing in mountains, by the way, so that's a fit. Yeah. And I was brave enough to say, I want to go up in the cabin. And I did it alone. Yeah. That would never have happened 10 years ago. So I think when I started this program, I felt that it was unfair that I've gotten this upbringing, unfair that all of this abuse was done to me. And now I think that if my story can help only one person, maybe it's worth it. So I'm really glad you came and I got to share my story. And I hope to see you on this journey so many more times. Yeah, because this is a way of life, and it's the better way of life. So thank you for listening.